a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Welcome to those here in person and those listening on the internet. I remind people who intend to testify that Representative Hanson, are you ready to go? Collect your thoughts. Those who are planning to testify, please sign in the back, in the back podium. If you have a handout, please use our wonderful pages. Speaking of which, could you introduce yourself? Come up to the microphone here and tell us who you are and where you're from.
Hello, my name is Joseph Lyon, and I'm a senior at Elk Point Jefferson.
Hi, I'm Rosalyn Rasmussen, and I'm from Viberg.
Welcome. With that, I would ask the Secretary to please call the roll.
Representative Consett.
Here.
Gibson. Gosh.
Here.
Hansen.
Here.
Hunhoff.
Here.
Killer.
Here.
Munsterman.
Here.
Nostrup.
Here.
Parsley.
Here.
Virtue.
Here.
Wink.
Here.
Cronin.
Here.
Lust.
Here.
Mr. Chair, there's a quorum.
Ask for a motion to approve the minutes. Moved by Hansen, second by Wink. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are approved. All right, let's get into our calendar. I anticipate taking the calendar in order as it was published. So with that, we will take the first bill, Senate Bill 117, an act to provide for an expedited endorsement of certain licenses, certificates, registrations, and permits for spouses of active duty military personnel. Proponent testimony on Senate Bill 117.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of House State Affairs. It's a privilege to be in front of you. I'm Matt Michaels. I'm the Lieutenant Governor of South Dakota, and I'm here because Deb Bowman, who is our lead policy advisor for the governor, actually is with her daughter, who had a baby last week. And interestingly enough, since you heard her story, this is the daughter who donated her kidney to Deb. And she just delivered her baby, and so it's good that, of course, Deb's got her priorities right. So she asked me to do this, and I said no, and then she said, oh, okay, well. Senate Bill 117 actually has a very interesting history. As a veteran and Secretary of Veterans Affairs and other work, we have seen a need for dealing with spouses of our active duty. The prepared remarks from Deb indicate a number of things. Senate Bill 117 was introduced because Governor Dugard had met, actually, and had a conversation last year with Stephanie Wetherington. Mrs. Wetherington is the wife of Wing Commander Colonel Wetherington at the Ellsworth Air Force Base. Governor Dugard then requested after that meeting that a team get together, including some of the people that you will hear today, including Secretary Hollingsworth and Deb, to just look at our process for licensing individuals, especially for spouses of our military personnel. Secretary Hollingsworth, Malcolm Risen, Roberts, and Melody Schopp all worked closely in drafting this legislation. The Chief Justice and Tom Barnett have worked closely with this office as well, and the Chief will be bringing a rule change within his ambit to allow for the licensing of attorneys who are spouses and married for those who are change of duty stations. Just as we have men and women who are overseas deployed, there are a number of other service women and men who serve much closer to South Dakota, and many of them are stationed at the Air Force Base at Ellsworth, and Senate Bill 117 is specifically targeted to help these families. Statistics are that 35% of military spouses in the workforce are in professions that require some type of certification or professional licensure. So when a military family is transferred to South Dakota, the family should not lose that earning power for an extended period of time when the spouse seeks a licensure. This bill will streamline that process so that the military spouse with a license or certificate in another state can easily transfer into South Dakota. You'll see that many of the professions covered are in Title 36, which include healthcare providers, plumbers, social worker, electricians, CPAs, other technical trades, as well as educators. This, of course, is part of a national effort to encourage states to adopt pro-military spouse licensure for quick and efficient joining into the workforce. We appreciate your consideration on behalf of the governor and me and our whole team that you'll hear from for your consideration of Senate Bill 117. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Further proponent testimony on House Bill 117.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Roy Slesh. I represent the South Dakota American Legion with over 21,000 members, and we totally support this bill and urge your support and urge you to vote for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony on House Bill, Senate Bill 117.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Greg Satizon. I'm the legal counsel for the Unified Judicial System. And as the Lieutenant Governor mentioned, the Chief Justice is very supportive of this concept. However, the legislation does not include a provision for attorneys, and that's because Article 5, Section 12 of the Constitution grants that authority to the Supreme Court to oversee the admission of attorneys. So we have worked with the Governor's office, and this summer at the rules hearing, we would anticipate a reciprocal provision related to the admission of attorneys. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 117. Proponent testimony? Seeing none, opponent testimony on Senate Bill 117. Opponent testimony? Seeing no opponent testimony, we'll close the public testimony portion of the hearing and open up to questions by members of the committee. Any questions by members of the committee? Lieutenant Governor, actually, I have a question for you.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
On page one of the bill, it appears that there is a prerequisite for this provision being able to be invoked in South Dakota, that the individual left employment in their previous state. So in a situation where maybe they're licensed, say as whatever profession, but have not been employed in that area of in their profession, and they come here, would they be ineligible for this procedure?
That's Mr. Chairman, thank you for the question. That is my understanding. This is formatted off of legislation that the Department of Defense has been working on as well. I may turn to Secretary Hollingsworth to bat cleanup on this, but if somebody has not left employment, there very well could be a gap significantly, for example, in a nursing license, and it may not have to have been renewed or had continuing education, but it would not, in fact, qualify for this is how I read it. May I ask her to assist me? Am I correct? A blind squirrel found a nut, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Thank you for that. Further questions by members of the committee? Seeing no further questions, we'll open up to committee action.
Chair.
Representative
Steele.
Consett.
Mr. Chair, I move to pass.
Motion by the representative on my far left, seconded by Representative Virtue. Do pass. Any discussion on that motion, Representative Consett?
There could be, but it would put you in bad light, so I'll hold my tongue.
Wise choice. Any further discussion on the do-pass motion on Senate Bill 117? Seeing no further discussion, the motion is do-pass. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Representative Consett.
Aye.
Gibson.
Aye.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Hunoff.
Aye.
Killer.
Aye.
Munsterman.
Aye.
Nostrup.
Aye.
Parsley.
Aye.
Virgio.
Aye.
Wink.
Aye.
Cronin.
Aye.
Lust.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there are 13 ayes.
That motion, having received the required number of votes, passes. Senate Bill 117 will head to the floor. Representative Parsley. Motion for consent. Anyone object to consent? Placement on the consent calendar. Seeing none, will that, Senate Bill 117 will go on consent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, have a great day.
Thank you. Next on our agenda is Senate Bill 146, an act to provide for the collection of certain gaming taxes, penalties, and interest, and to declare an emergency. Proponent testimony on Senate Bill 146.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Justin Cronin, District 23 Representative. I will be brief. The current statute.
Opponent testimony. 146.
I just always like hearing that because it never happens. So the current statutes in South Dakota don't allow for the collection of gaming taxes at the same it does as, for instance, retail sales tax, reuse tax, contractor's tax. And because of that, the Department of Revenue thinks this bill will correct that inconsistency. This will apply the same guarantees for payment of gaming taxes that are in place for all those other taxes that are out there. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I will turn it over to Larry Eliason and the Commission to fill you in on exactly what changes in the bill.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 146.
My mic wasn't on. Larry Eliason, Executive Secretary of South Dakota Commission on Gaming. As Representative Cronin explained, we did find that there is an inconsistency in the delinquent tax collection statutes and that the same legal process and procedures that are currently in place for many other taxes, especially sales tax, don't exist in the event that a gaming tax becomes delinquent. Section 1 would provide that any unpaid gaming taxes, interest, and penalties are a lien against the property of the taxpayer, and that the Commission on Gaming can file a notice of tax lien with the Register of Deeds. This language, members of the committee, was taken almost verbatim from Section 1059.11, and of course 1059 is the general chapter on administration of taxes. Section 2 allows the Commission on Gaming to request the county treasurer to issue a distress warrant and then allows the sheriff to proceed to collect the taxes in the same manner as already set forth for the collection of other delinquent taxes. That language is almost verbatim from 1059.13. And then Section 3 was taken from Section 1045.55 in the Sales Tax Code that holds that officers and directors of corporations, members of LLCs, and partners of partnerships are personally liable if the partnership or the corporation did not pay the taxes. And those individuals can avoid the personal liability by posting a bond. And again, that language is taken from 1045. The whole point of the bill is, as I said, to have the same legal processes and legal procedures in place to collect a delinquent gaming tax on casino revenue, as is already in the code for collecting sales tax and other taxes if they become delinquent. With that, I'd stand by for questions. And if they're really, really technical, Mr. Shaw, the Commission's legal counsel, is here, nattily attired in his blue badge so he can testify on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Eliason. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 146. Proponent testimony. Opponent testimony on Senate Bill 146. Any opponent testimony on Senate Bill 146? Seeing none, we'll open it up to questions by members of the committee. Any questions by members of the committee? Representative Virchio.
Just one quick one. And this on Section 4. Declare this an emergency?
Yes. We did. I forgot to mention that. We did put an emergency clause on this, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My theory is that when you find a mistake, you should fix it as soon as possible. We found the mistake basically last month. And the whole purpose of the emergency clause is to fix it as soon as possible.
And one follow-up, please. Would this in any way make, is there a time period where this would help in a recent situation that happened, or?
We can, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we can only go forward. We can't go back. We can't go backward with any legislation, but with the emergency clause, we can fix the problem as soon as possible and not wait till July 1st. That was the theory behind adding an emergency clause. I know that takes a two-thirds vote and it keeps it off the consent calendar, but, I want to fix the problem as soon as I can.
Further questions by members of the committee? Mr. Lawson, I have a couple questions for you. Is the commission right now not able to obtain a lien?
We would have to file a suit and get a judgment and then file a lien. It's not an automatic. The delinquent taxes themselves, as I understand it, and I'll defer to Mr. Shaw if I'm incorrect, there's not an automatic provision for a tax lien. We would have to file a suit and then get a lien just as if we were an unsecured creditor that went to court and got a tax lien.
Okay. And do you envision, what would be the priority between, I would envision when someone's not paying the taxes on gaming, they're also likely not paying sales tax and other state taxes. What would be the priority in that situation? Whichever department gets to the
race to the courthouse, I
is
think.
It?
Well, that, I think so, Mr. Chairman. In my opinion, and again, if my legal counsel disagrees with me, he can take the mic, but we would, I think, almost always be second behind the bank because the lender is going to file a lien probably as soon as the mortgage is executed. A casino has to be in business at least 6 weeks before they're delinquent in the taxes, because if you opened a casino the 1st of February, your taxes aren't even due until the 15th of March. So you'd have to be in business at least 6 weeks if there were sales tax, and there might be obviously some sales taxable transactions that happen. It's possible that another division of the department might get to the courthouse first because of the schedule for paying the taxes and when they become delinquent.
As far as you know, there's no priority, statutory priority, as far as state liens for taxes.
I couldn't answer that question, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Shaw, do you know that?
Morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Mike Shaw, attorney and peer, South Dakota Commission on Gaming. I think that question is addressed by Section 1 of the bill. The last line, is it, excuse me, the second to the last line, indicates the priority of the lien is determined as of the date that the notice of the tax lien is received and indexed. So each one of these statutes that addresses state entity tax liens has this same identical language in it. So, as Mr. Eliason said, it's really a race to the courthouse. But just as an aside, if there's only enough money to pay one tax entity, well, one tax entity is paid all the money that's available. It basically goes to the same pot. So, well.
Well, and the way this is structured, though, since all the managers and officers are liable, in theory, once the assets of the entity is exhausted, you still have recourse to the individuals, correct?
That would be correct.
Further questions by members of the committee? Representative Parsley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You just brought a question to my mind. Do you know in sales tax and other taxes, do they have the same ability to go beyond the corporation to the individual?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that most of them do. I saw in my research of this, I saw Section 3 in several different places associated with different state entities, yes.
Thank you.
Further questions by members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
We'll now open it up to committee action. Representative Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to pass.
Moved by Gibson, seconded by Parsley. Do pass. Discussion on that motion, Representative Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this fills a gap in our current gaming tax laws, and it will suffice if a situation arises again where the law will cover those delinquent taxes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further discussion on the motion, do pass. Seeing none, I would ask the Secretary to call the roll. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay.
Representative Consett.
Aye.
Gibson.
Aye.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Killer.
Aye.
Munsterman.
Aye.
Nostrup.
Aye.
Parsley.
Aye.
Riccio.
Aye.
Wink.
Aye.
Cronin.
Aye.
Lust.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there are 13 ayes.
That motion succeeds. Senate Bill 146 will head to the floor. Next up on our calendar is Senate Bill 200, an act to revise certain provisions concerning campaign finance. Proponent testimony on Senate Bill 200.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Senator Mark Kirkby from Rapid City, and I will preface my remarks following the leadership of Representative Cronin that, in fact, I will be brief. Okay, with all due respect, I've tried that numerous times, and I just cannot. Senate Bill...
We're well of your past brevity, former Representative Kirkaby.
Thank you. Senate Bill 200 certainly is brought to you for your consideration. Certainly not an act to be involved in the political process and taking one side of an issue or not. I believe it's an honorable attempt to be continue our tradition of being palms up in our campaigning. If an individual is going to get involved in a campaign, heaven forbid they're going to be honorable. They're going to be accountable. They're going to be credible, and there's certainly going to be some integrity in that system. Currently in state statute, there's kind of a variety on when a disclaimer on a political advertising has to be posted, as well as when a disclaimer, when that political action, when your report has to be filed with your Secretary of State. This bill puts everything on a level playing field. If, in fact, if you're going to spend, according to this bill, Senate Bill 200, more than $200, you will, in fact, have to file a campaign finance report as well as put a disclaimer on that political advertising. And it's unfortunate that this bill is coming forth. There's no secret that last year we had more than a sense of awkwardness within our political process. There certainly were those postcards being mailed out that did not have a disclaimer, as well as that that robocall stuff that was going out. It's unfortunate, again, that this is certainly putting that integrity into our system. And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my short, compelling argument is this bill, I believe, certainly is warranted for the citizens of South Dakota. Certainly needed it from a candidate's perspective as well as an issue's perspective. If you're going to play the games in the political process, you're going to follow the rules just like any legislator has to do, just like any political action committee has to do, and I just appreciate and encourage your favorable consideration and support of Senate Bill 200.
Mr. Chairman, may I chime in?
Thank you. You may.
Thank you very much.
Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 200.
Thank you. Thank you for that latitude, Mr. Chairman. Charlie Hoffman, District 23. And I'm on this bill for really one reason. And that one reason is if someone's sending out postcards or robocalls to my constituents, at least this bill gives me the decency to go back, set the record straight, and call them on information that may be lying, misleading, untrue, and it gives us, really it opens up the process so that we know who's attacking. I think every one of us is owed the decency of knowing who's coming after us, and this bill will do that. It's going to be a setup where these are going to be run through the Secretary of State's office. He'll be up testifying in a little bit. And I think what we'll see is a great decrease in some of the horrifically ugly politics that's been that has gone on in the past. So I'd urge you, with all due respect to this great committee, to pass this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 200. Proponent testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jason Gant, Secretary of State. I wanted to give a little bit of background on kind of how the procedure works with my office when we receive different complaints regarding campaign finance violations. The process that we go through is we try and gather as much information as we can. We ask for a copy of the postcard. We ask for any information, any documents that the complaint may have. And once we have that information, we try and then contact that individual or that group to gather some more information. Once we're able to complete that, we then turn it over to the Attorney General's office, and then he will conduct his investigation. We, of course, do not have law enforcement authority or anything like that. We just gather the information, try and educate people the best we can on what the campaign finance laws are. I agree that Senate Bill 200 will help make it clearer and more transparent in the campaign finance process. The big areas of the bill is it changes the $2,000 to $100, and it eliminates the 60 days before an election of when that paid-for buy information is required. So this way, at any time over the course of the year, as long as it's $100 or more, they will have to file a statement and put that disclaimer, paid for by so-and-so. I believe this will help with the transparency to make sure that the public knows who's spending this money. If there's a goal out there to try and limit money in campaigns, that's going to be impossible. The one thing we can do is ensure that the public knows who's paying for the advertisement. With that, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would encourage your support of Senate Bill 200. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary Gant. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 200. Proponent testimony, Senate Bill 200. Seeing none, is there opponent testimony on Senate Bill 200? Any opponent testimony? Seeing none, we'll close the public testimony portion of the hearing and open up to questions by members of the committee. Representative Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Secretary Gant. Mr. Secretary, in addition to the postcards that I received this summer and to the robocalls that I received this summer, I also got some electronic computer-type postcards that didn't have any kind of a disclaimer on them as well on the same issues with the same candidates. So this bill, I don't see anything in there that would cover that situation. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it would, as long as the expense is $100 or more. So if that's all in conjunction with a mailing or a robocall plus an email, obviously all of that together is going to be over $100. The reason that there needs to be a dollar amount is if you think of the Ladies Bridge Club. If they send out an email to their 15 members that says, don't forget to vote, it's election day, we really like so-and-so, obviously that doesn't need a paid-for buy. But when it's massive and big, then yes. So in that situation, if it was just the email and it cost less than $100, then no, it wouldn't.
Follow-up, Representative Gibson.
Okay. But this particular ad that I received was like a color ad with pictures and, you know, a postcard replicated in an email. But do they pay for that? It obviously landed in my junk mail account. But does somebody pay for that on the internet? Or is it just something they can put on there for free?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, if it costs $100 or more, they would have to put the paid for by disclaimer. Obviously, you're going to have, most email accounts are free, but there could be some associated internet costs. And if there was research done, especially if it was a type of scoring type card, obviously there's a lot of research, and that could equal up to that $100. So those could be some of the examples. But if it's below that, they wouldn't have to.
One more follow-up.
How would you prove that they spent more than $100, though? How could, I don't know how you could actually make certain that they did that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we wouldn't be policing that. They would need to either, one, put the disclaimer on there, two, fill out the form indicating where their funds are from. Obviously, if it gets to a certain level, then we're going to take the information we have, turn it over to the Attorney General, and then he and his staff would do that investigation to determine the cost.
Further questions by members of the committee? Representative Parsley.
Thank you. Just a clarification question. I think you can do this, Mr. Secretary. I think the senator in his exuberance looked at the bill number instead of the... It's $100, right? Not $200?
Yes, sir. $100.
Okay, thanks.
Further questions, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the Secretary of State. Mr. Secretary, I have a question, sort of a mechanical question on page 4, section 2. Are you there?
Yep. Yes.
Okay, so this section apparently used to deal only with a political committee or political party that makes a payment or promise. Now we're adding organization and person to the section. Now it says any person that makes a payment or promise of payment totaling $100 or more shall file a statement with the Secretary of State. So explain to me how this would work if this was an individual and perhaps the individual gives a political action committee $200 to help pay for some sort of postcard or robocall or whatever. Now, is that person under this section mandated to file a statement with the Secretary of State's office? Because it says any political committee organization person. So any person that makes a payment or promise of payment totaling $100 or more shall file a statement with the Secretary of State disclosing the name, street, address, city, and state of such political action committee, organization, person, or political party. You follow me there?
Mm-hmm.
So is the individual who donates $150 also responsible for filing a statement as well as maybe the political action committee that they gave the money to so that the political action committee could carry out the robocall?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, political action committees, political parties, they all have another set of rules that they have to follow. As you as all candidate committees know that you have to file all your income and expenses and everything. What Section 2, Line 18 there is getting towards is there have been individuals who will buy a newspaper advertisement. As an example. So if I buy a newspaper ad that says, you know, vote for John for this, and it costs that $100 or more, they have to put that disclaimer on there. Now, a contribution from an individual to a political action committee, that information is recorded through the political action committee's income section. Now, if it's a go back to that newspaper advertisement. If it's an advertisement that says, vote for John, and it's paid for by ABC Political Action Committee and John Doe Citizen or whatever, then yes, John Doe Citizen would have to put his name on there. So if they were both paying for that, because it has to be for a communication that clearly identifies the candidate, the expressly advocate, the election or defeat, that they would have to file a statement.
Further questions, Representative Wink?
Morning, Mr. Secretary. I'm not sure who would answer this. You possibly could, but in the language here, it requests $100. Now, if an organization would ask their individual members to donate $99 each, would they be required? Is there a way around that, or am I getting too nitpicky here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we're kind of there's two different streets here, so to speak. One is the contributions to a political action committee or a political party. All those rules, just like we've all seen hundreds and hundreds of times with all the campaign finance filings, then there's the independent expenditures. So if ABC Corporation wanted to buy an advertisement saying vote for John and they spent over $100, they would have to file the paperwork.
Follow-up. Yeah, I'm not talking about a political action committee. I'm just talking about an organization, an independent organization. They're trying to get money to do the robocalls or the postcards or whatever. And so they're soliciting individual members for money, $99 each. Would they have to report?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the $100 is total for that entire postcard. So if that postcard costs more than $100, they would have to list, if it was, you know, six people who paid for it, or if it was one organization, or if it was an organization and six people, they would then have to list all of that in the paid for by. So paid for by ABC Corporation, paid for by John Doe, paid for by Sally Doe.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Further questions by members of the committee? Representative Gibson.
Mr. Secretary, on Section 2, Line 19, where it talks about the promise of payment, how is the Attorney General going to execute on a promise of payment? Couldn't I just say, I didn't make that promise?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's obviously what the challenges are with criminal investigations, and I'm sure the Attorney General has experienced that situation before and has procedures for that.
Further questions, Representative Cronin.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. First thing, one, I want to clarify something that Representative Wink brought up. Let's say I was to approach a company to make a postcard, and I was going to pay them $99 for that postcard, and then after the election, I'd pay them $99 more, because all I'd need is one postcard to put out on the internet and scrape around. So I guess from what I'm hearing up here is, why the $100? Why not zero or one?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the reason for not $0 is, like I mentioned before, if the Ladies Bridge Club has 15 members and they send out an email saying, vote for John, he's a great guy, the thought was that didn't need to have a paid-for-by disclaimer on there. The same thing would be if someone's mother sent to her 50 contacts in her email list saying, vote for my son or daughter, that wouldn't need to say paid for by John's mom. That was the intent with the $100. Keep in mind, currently it's $2,000 and 60 days before the election, so we're eliminating the 60 days and then moving the $2,000 to $100. If you wanted to make it $50 or $20, I mean, we can handle whatever that you guys deem necessary. So,
Representative Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to Sections 2 and 3, Mr. Secretary. I noticed Section 1 has a Class 1 misdemeanor, but Sections 2 and 3 don't have any penalties at all. Shouldn't they have some penalties? Or a penalty, or at least a Class 1 misdemeanor? Because I can get out of my promise of payment with, you know, no repercussions here.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, Sections 2 and 3, we were just changing what the current law says. Obviously, if you break the law, you're breaking the law. If you want to add penalties, that's definitely something you can do, but they weren't in there before. And I think the main goal of this bill was to make sure that there was the transparency, and that $2,000 in 60 days wasn't enough.
Follow-up, Representative Gibson.
Section 3, though, is a brand-new section, Mr. Secretary, so there wouldn't be anything that you're duplicating there.
Representative, that's basically copied from other areas. But if you want to put it all to be a Class 1 misdemeanor, or if you want anything bigger in the all of 1227 is campaign finance law. It varies throughout there on where it says Class 1 misdemeanor or whatever. Yeah, if you want to put penalties in there, I'm totally fine with that.
Let me follow up on that, Secretary Gant. In Chapter 1227, is there a catch-all provision anywhere in that chapter that indicates violation of this chapter is a Class 1 or Class 2 misdemeanor?
Mr. Chairman, I don't remember that there is a catch-all, but I know that Class 1 misdemeanor is kind of sprinkled throughout. so I think that would be a great addition if you wanted to put that into 1227.
Representative Hunhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I appreciate the spirit of what we're trying to do here, but I just wonder if we're giving false assurance to the citizenry that we're actually really doing anything. Let me pose this. I mean, if you had more technical computer skills than I have, and whether you were employed by a large organization or a political party or just a loner in your own basement, you could spend not a hundred dollars, but hundreds of hours of your own time playing all sorts of practical jokes, couldn't you? Mm-hmm. And create all sorts of political mayhem and still not fall under this proposed statute?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, absolutely. I mean, the main purpose of Senate Bill 200 was to stop the postcards that were mailed out, the robocalls, which obviously cost more than $100, that don't have that paid for by disclaimer on there. And even after this bill passes, there's going to be – when people want to try and get around campaign finance laws, they're going to dig and try and find a way. I think when we have situations that come up, we should try and address them. And if we can stop that situation from happening, great, and then move on to whatever they come up with in the next level.
Follow-up, Representative Hunoff.
So, Mr. Secretary, and perhaps the language is in the statute, but so let's say you're a significantly large organization, a political consulting group of some sort, and you had your own capability to do within in-house to do robocalls, so you didn't have to make a $100 expenditure. Would that kind of an organization fall under this? If you had it within your own power, within house of your consulting company.
Mr. Chairman, that would be the representative. That would be the same if you had if ABC Printing Company was going to start sending out postcards. Obviously, there's going to be an inherent cost to print those out. There's going to be your postage, all those different costs. So I would think that in those situations, they would have to put the disclaimer and they would have to file the paperwork.
Further questions by members of the committee? Representative Consett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary Gant, I noticed in Section 2, Line 18, at the very end, the verbiage is that makes a payment or promise of a payment totaling. Shouldn't that verbiage also be on page 1 with the independent expenditures?
Representative, you're talking about the promise, the word promise?
No, the totaling is what I want to get to. Is that
on payment totaling?
Payment total promise or total payment. Shouldn't that verbiage also be in Section 1 on Line 9 when it talks about independent expenditure or promise of a payment totaling of $100 or more? I guess I'm just looking for consistency.
I think we could. I don't think that that's, at least it's not coming to mind on.
Further questions by members of the committee?
That'd be fine.
I'm going to, given the abundance amount of questions and clarifications, I'm going to defer further action on Senate Bill 200 in the hopes that some of the issues that we've addressed here can be picked up in an amendment that we will pick up on Wednesday. So at this point, we are going to defer further discussion on Senate Bill 200. Having said that, is there anyone? We actually took opponent and proponent testimony. So we will defer further action on Senate Bill 200 with the anticipation that there will be an amendment to address some of the issues that have been raised here today. At this point, I want to go back up to Senate Bill 117. I'm informed that that bill is not eligible for consent calendar, given that there is a fee involved. So Senate Bill 117 will not be on consent. And I would ask that Representative Munsterman could carry that on the floor. Moving on in our calendar, we'll move to Senate Bill 204. An act to revise certain provisions regarding the deposit and expenditure of tobacco settlement revenues and bond proceeds. Proponent testimony on Senate Bill 204.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the House State Affairs Committee, my name is Jason Dilges, and I'm with the Bureau of Finance and Management. I think this is a bill that would be eligible for the consent, Mr. Chairman. and hopefully a lot briefer than the last bill. Senate Bill 204 really is a cleanup piece of legislation that's brought by the governor. It all stemmed from the discussion, if you recall, from the governor's State of the State address, where he mentioned that we were pursuing a refinancing transaction to the state's tobacco bonds that were issued in 2002. We've been putting a lot of work in on that particular topic, and we're set to close probably in the next 30 days on that. But when we started to prepare the official statement for the refunding of the bonds, we realized that there were some statutes that actually conflicted with areas within the state constitution. And if I could, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just take you back 11, 12 plus sessions ago to give you the reason why. Starting off back in 2001 legislative session, the Senate introduced and ultimately passed, as well as the House, and the governor signed Senate Bill 226, and that was a bill that gave the South Dakota Building Authority additional powers for which they could go out and sell the state's tobacco interests and retain the proceeds in a fund. That bill passed, and like I said, and then following that, there was a joint resolution, Senate Joint Resolution 4, that was introduced and passed, which referred that language to a vote of the public in April of 2001. The voters, and I should mention that what that did was to set up a constitutionally protected trust fund. And if you recall, the state cannot invest in anything other than overnight securities without specific permission through Constitution. And so that's why the people were asked to vote for this. It passed by over 70%, setting up what's called the Healthcare Trust and the Education Enhancement Trust Fund. There was one vote to establish both of the trust funds. What I'm dealing with today here is just the Education Enhancement Trust Fund side. And so when the constitutional amendment passed, it put in new items creating the Education Enhancement Trust Fund, which differed from the law that the Senate and the House passed that prior session. So when we went back in this last year and started looking at that, we saw some conflicts between statute and the Constitution. And so that's really what Senate Bill 204 does, is to try and clean up all of those instances within the law that conflict with the Constitution so that we have agreeable laws as well as items within the Constitution. I should mention that the what was passed by the voters in 2001 now finds itself in Article 12, Section 6 of the Constitution, again, which sets up the Permanent Trust Fund for Education Enhancement. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my testimony. It did pass out of the Senate State Affairs Committee on consent and did not receive a no vote in the Senate. I know that doesn't guarantee its passage in front of your committee. I just thought you might find that helpful. Thank you.
You've thrown down the gauntlet, Mr. Dilges. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 204. Proponent testimony, Senate Bill 204. Seeing none, opponent testimony on Senate Bill 204. Seeing none, we'll close the public testimony portion of the hearing and open up to questions by members of the committee. Representative Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see a little bit of inconsistency on this bill as I'm looking at the printed copy, and it may not be on your computers that way, but it did come off on mine. It says Senate Bill 204 on pages 1, 2, and 3, but on 5, 6, and 7, it says Senate Bill 214. So, and 8. Computer is correct?
Yep.
Okay. Just the printed copy is incorrect then.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gibson, I only have the paper copies in front of me that were printed out, and mine say 204, but it may be a typographical. I apologize for that. I don't have a computer in front of me. But I have two copies here, and they both say 204. I'm sorry.
Further questions on Senate Bill 204? Representative Funhoff.
Mr. Chairman, just curious, what is the scope of this? I mean, what kind of added earnings can we expect? Or,
Chairman, Representative, kind of depends on the market, but what really brought this forward is obviously the bond market is very advantageous to borrowers at this point in time. We're looking at some scenarios right now that would return basically present value savings back to the trust fund. It would not accrue in terms of real dollars until the payments come in from the tobacco companies. And so what we've done is anticipated a different amortization schedule as well as future investment earnings on the trust fund that would basically be more than advantageous to us as opposed to the current situation. Let me put that in layman's terms. We have a 15-year mortgage on our house, and we're going to refinance our mortgage not only for a lower interest rate, but we're going to extend the term slightly for a couple more years. And what we're able to do is, because that amortization schedule happens to be less than the anticipated tobacco revenues, one, it will be rated higher because the debt service coverage will be less. Number two, according to the model for which the trust fund is invested with the investment council, we can earn a superior return on those dollars that don't have to go to the bondholders. And so there's a baked-in, I think, 6.4% rate of return assumption that will grow the trust fund over time. So there's really two components, the interest rate and then the amortization schedule, which will return more money to the trust fund. I'm going to anticipate your next question, but all of that money is constitutionally bound to the trust fund for the enhancement of education.
But the example you use on, you know, a mortgage on a house, I mean, you, if you did that, you could get some kind of an idea. Is it going to be $100, $100,000, $1 million in a range?
We're still working that out with the financial folks, but just from our perspective, the present value is somewhere in the $30 to $40 million range.
Further questions on Senate Bill 204? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Dilges. We'll open it up to action by members of the committee. Representative Nostro.
Move to pass on Senate Bill 204.
Second. Moved by Nostro, second by Hansen. Discussion on that motion, Representative Nostro.
No, thank you.
Any further discussion on the motion to pass? Seeing none, I would ask the Secretary to call the roll. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay.
Representative Consett. Gibson.
Aye.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Killer.
Aye.
Munsterman.
Aye.
Nostro.
Aye.
Parsley.
Aye.
Virtue.
Aye.
Wink.
Aye.
Cronin.
Aye.
Lust.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there were 13 ayes.
That motion, having received the required number of votes, passes. Senate Bill 204 will head to the floor to pass. Next on our calendar is Senate Bill 55. Next and last on our calendar is Senate Bill 55. An act to make certain form and style changes regarding the bank franchise tax. Proponent testimony on Senate Bill 55.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Mike Howdyshell with the Department of Revenue. Senate Bill 55 is a real straightforward bill. It's just making a couple of minor changes and some cleanup to the bank franchise tax laws. Section 1 corrects an apparent oversight when two additional apportionment statutes contained at SDCL 1043-25.8 and 25.9 were enacted in 1996. Both of these statutes should have been added to the statutory cross-reference contained in SDCL 1043-29.1. And if you recall from House Bill 1045 that this committee had under consideration last week, that's the provision that deals with alternative apportionment methods. And this just fixes a cross-reference, something that should have been done when those two statutes were passed back in 96. Section 2 amends current language which allows bank franchise taxpayers to file consolidated returns at their election without petitioning the Secretary of the Department of Revenue. The amendment would simply require the taxpayer to seek permission to file consolidated returns before doing so, much like bank franchise taxpayers must petition the Secretary before using alternative apportionment methods for their net income calculation. And really, this is more of a procedural type of issue. Instead of, let's say, Bank A and Bank B that are related corporations filing an amended or filing a consolidated return without any notice or otherwise indicating that they are doing so to the department. This would just require them to approach the department prior to filing the consolidated return. Gives the Department of Revenue some notice of what's going on, and really most importantly, have something to put in the file so we know what's going on with these particular taxpayers and why they're filing a consolidated return. There is an administrative rule already in place that talks about when the secretary can deny filing consolidated returns, and I think this would just kind of fix the process to allow us to take a look at the request prior to the entities choosing to file consolidated returns instead of having to do it after the fact. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would ask for your favorable consideration of Senate Bill 55. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 55. Proponent testimony. Seeing no further proponent testimony, is there opponent testimony on Senate Bill 55? Opponent testimony. No opponent testimony. I open up to questions by members of the committee. Any questions by members of the committee? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the gentleman from Revenue. It's a simple question, really. It seems like Section 2 is a bit more than just a style and form change. I just wonder if you think that's the case, if you think it goes a little beyond style and form, which is expressed in the title.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I think you could probably say that it probably is more than just a form and style change. Really what it's doing is making a tweak to the process for filing consolidated returns. Whether or not that's necessarily form and style, I don't know. But it's really making a what I would consider a minor tweak to the process and just kind of changing the order in which bank franchise taxpayers approach the department when they're doing consolidated returns.
All right, thank you.
Further questions by members of the committee? Representative Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hadishal, do you have the administrative rule number that's already in place?
I do. It's 64-26-03-13.
Thank you.
Further questions by members of the committee? Seeing none, we'll open it up. Thank you, Mr. Hadishal. We'll open it up to action by members of the committee.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Gibson.
I move to pass.
Move to pass by Gibson, seconded by Killer. Discussion on that motion, Representative Gibson.
I think this is just, as Mr. Hadishal said, a procedural issue. There are administrative rules already in place. It will facilitate the process for filing consolidated returns, and I urge do pass. Thank you.
Further discussion on the motion do pass? Seeing none, I'd ask the Secretary to call the roll. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay.
Representative Consett.
Aye.
Gibson.
Aye.
Gosch.
Aye.
Hansen.
Aye.
Plenhoff.
Aye.
Killer.
Aye.
Munsterman.
Aye.
Nostrup.
Aye.
Parsley.
Aye.
Virtue.
Aye.
Wink.
Aye.
Cronin.
Aye.
Lust.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there are 13 ayes.
That motion, having received the required number of votes, succeeds, and Senate Bill 55 will head to the floor. Motion for consent. Anyone object to the consent motion?
I would object.
We have an objection. Senate Bill 55 will be carried by Representative Consett on the floor. Any further matters for us to discuss today? Very good. We have come to the conclusion of our agenda. I would entertain a motion to adjourn at this time. Moved by Gibson, seconded by Hansen. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. We are adjourned.